What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the latest episode of Can I Kick It FC. This is your host, as always, Elliot Barr, and is joining me is the leading head, the figurehead of it all. If you want to figure out about coaching, you come ask her. This is Mr. Cole Hercules of the Black Soccer Coaches Organization. How are you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing well. Just looking forward to being on your show. Love all the work that you guys are doing and looking forward to a great conversation with you, Elliot.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That makes me feel great. So, Nicole, we were talking beforehand, but you do a lot of work with the United Soccer Coaches and the Black Soccer Coaches. Real quick, for the listeners who don't know who that, those are, can you explain to them what those two organizations are?
Sure, of course. The Black Soccer Coaches is just an extension of United Soccer Coaches. It's a community that we created to increase representation, increase value, increase engagement, increase communications amongst Black coaches within the Black soccer landscape. But United Soccer Coaches is the world's largest coaching organization. So when you think of membership, when you think of coaching education, when you think of advocacy, when you think of professional development, coaches from across the globe are all involved with United Soccer Coaches. Throughout the year, they do coaching education, the different events. And the convention, of course, is once a year, and you have coaches from all across the globe who come together just to get sharp, to learn, to catch up, to network. And it's really a powerful network of coaches that come together.
And how long have you been a part of this organization?
Probably going on, probably going on 8 years now.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So something else we always like to ask our listeners, our interviewee is, how did you get started into the game of soccer? What made you fall in love with it?
I'll tell you what, I was playing basketball and running track, and my neighbor,
just like me.
I thought I was going to be a point guard. I'm like, I'm going to play in the NBA. There wasn't a WNBA then. My neighbor was playing soccer in the front yard, and I kind of went over. We were kicking the ball around, and her father was the coach. So, you know, he's like, well, we're starting soccer next week. You should come and play. You know, I played one game and scored a ridiculous amount of goals. They moved me up the next week, and it was just a wrap from there. Bye-bye basketball.
Got to ask, how many goals did you score in that game?
I the first time I played, I scored a lot because I mean I'm fast. I ran track too, so it was rec soccer. It was a little easy to score some goals. So I don't remember how many, but it was a lot.
It was a lot. Okay.
Oh, well, they had to move me up. I played like a couple games, and they had to move me up to select and travel and things like that. So yeah, I didn't stay at rec level too long.
I want to ask you this question. How long was it before you had a Black teammate on your team?
Black teammate. Oh, my goodness. Probably high school. I had another Black teammate. Yeah, but other than that, predominantly white teams.
Okay. So I kind of had that same issue when I was playing soccer because I'm from the city of Richmond, Virginia, and playing like rec soccer or like travel soccer, it was like I was the only Black kid, and then I see another Black kid on the team and be like, hey, two of us.
You know, you almost give the nod like I see you.
Right, you kind of just throw the nod and I'm like, hey, I see you. So about the Black Soccer Coaches organization, an organization such as that, why is it so important to the ecosystem of soccer?
You use the right word. It's about being able to create an ecosystem from the youth level all the way up to the pro level. And within the last couple of years, we've just seen an increase in just awareness of some of the issues with discrimination, with the hiring practices, with racial situations that were happening on the field. So we've been able to have some real conversations with everyone from US youth soccer I had a call with, you know, some of the guys from MLS this week. So we're in those rooms having conversations with people on how we create more access for Black coaches, for Black players to have a better experience. We've done reports on the soccer landscape so that we know that, you know, 98% of executive directors through US youth soccer are white. There's certain things that we are very well aware of and we're looking to remedy. So that's why our group is important on the terms of advocacy, but also on the terms of developing the next generation of coaches. We have mentorship programs. We have professional development programs. We are looking to create that ecosystem so that from any level that we have coaches who want to get involved in this game, that we have a hand in helping the best that we can.
And real quick, like, when I'm not even gonna lie, when you said the 98% of executive officers are white, that doesn't even shock me. Would have guessed it more at 99%.
100%, right?
Yeah, I would have thought it was 100%. I've had these conversations with other people, and I've always felt like it comes down to just because we don't have the same level of access as our counterparts. Like, they just assumed, oh, well, you didn't grow up with soccer, so you wouldn't be interested in it.
That's a complete myth, and I think it's a complete list because people are so disconnected to the soccer landscape. We play this game. We've been playing this game at every level from so long successfully. A lot of the players that are homegrown, you hear them being homegrown, they've come out of Black clubs. They've been developed. We have people who aren't even really aligned with the U.S. Soccer landscape, so they're doing things kind of on their own outside of the U.S. soccer landscape and sending their players overseas and different things. But that's not true. It's just when people are disconnected and they don't really have an idea on the pulse of our community, they can easily say that because they don't know. You know, they're not trying to make an impact. They're not getting involved. They don't know what's happening in their backyard. But we play this game. We play it well. We coach this game. We coach it well. We have ownership in this game, and we own it well. So we just got to get more eyes on it.
Right. And that's the thing that kind of like irritates me the most is when a lot of clubs, they say they want more people of color to be with, you know, whether that to be supporters or in the front office, but they expect for them to come to them and not go out and do the work. Can you just speak to some, and I'm pretty sure you have the same level of frustrations.
Oh, yeah.
Can you just speak to some of your frustrations as to why are clubs in this archaic thinking? Oh, we'll just put it out there and whoever comes will come.
And it's not even just coaches. And I was about to get too real. There's players do. And there's – so I'll put it to you this way. In the last 2-3 years, we've just seen an increase in people who actually care. We've been an organization. We just had our 25th anniversary. So we had people like – you love history. So Lincoln Phillips, who won 2 NCAA championships with Howard University. Mike Curry, who was – he was actually one of the goalkeeper coaches for Jurgen Klinsmann, one of the only Black coaches at the time. Hilton Days, you know, played on the U.S. national team. Sam Akpodu, Nigerian women's national team head coach. Kendall Reyes, you know, a phenomenal, one of the first coach educators to United Soccer Coaches. So we have a wonderful history of people who were willing to put their careers on the line. Because a lot of times when you want to talk about race and you're making people uncomfortable, it's not a popular thing to do, but it is now. So that frustrates me is that so many people, once they realize that there is this attention that can be garnered from it, rather than the blood, sweat, and tears of our forefathers and four sisters who did this work, with a lot of the urban programs that were created, a Black woman created many of them. People still to this day don't know the name of Carolyn McKenzie, who started the Soccer in the Street program. You hear about the program, but you don't know that a Black woman created that. So there's a lot of things in the history of this game that no one knows, how we've been linked to it, how we've created, how we help the landscape. So those are the things that frustrate me. And then you kind of see people who are jumping in and saying they're doing this and that, but it's really surface level to be seen. And there's real, real hard work that we have to do to continue to increase representation and to change the hearts and the minds of folks who think they're doing some good work, but it's really surface level. You know, we have some work to do. And it's not just putting mini pitches in.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And for me being up here in an area in Virginia where, or just anywhere, where a lot of stuff seems like surface level, like they think like just doing a post or, oh, hey, we're going to have a Juneteenth event. It just feels as if they're not understanding the work that has to go in behind it.
And I think for sometimes people really just want to feel like they're contributing something positive. But when we're looking at the institutional and systemic problems that we're having within the landscape, a lot of those things don't do anything to change the racial hierarchies or even just the narrative that's coming out. A lot of the times I get irritated with some of the programs I see because it's this narrative that's, you know, our community needs saving. And it's not that, you know, just our community just needs access and resources, and we thrive and we dominate, you know? So it's one of those things where I want it to be more about empowerment and less about, I don't know what the right word is, but it needs to be more about empowerment and looking to see that we're willing to kind of give some power in different spaces that have been powerless and voiceless.
No, I think you're right on track with it. we have to change people's ideal of it, of like, oh, since they don't, since we assume they don't understand the game, we have to help them to help them understand, where it's just like, you just open the door and allow them to embrace it however it may be. It's almost like you give a kid a coloring book and you allow them to do what they want with it and not try to dictate how they're supposed to understand it.
I will say this, though. I do love how open, like, that's why I love United Soccer Coaches, when Lincoln Phillips and a handful of coaches went to them 25 years ago and said, hey, we need this platform to help increase representation. It was a no-brainer. They did that. So when you think about organizations who have created, you know, that platform, helped with access and resources, I really do shout out United Soccer Coaches for that. And then what we've been able to create, the 30 for 30 program, we really have some nice, amazing, up-and-coming young coaches who were getting plugged in. And we have coaches in our landscape, and I'm just going to shout out some of our folks because we had a great college season last year. You know, Kadani McAlpin, who coached and staff of the year last year with USC, who's now the Georgia Bulldogs head coach. Eric Bell with TCU, who's back-to-back league championship coach of the year, staff of the year. Kia McNeil, coach of the year, staff of the year, league champion. So we have all these coaches who are coming up. But the thing I love about our coaches on the men's and the women's side is that they recognize the value of mentorship. So they have no problem putting their hand around that next generation of folks who want to know what it looks like, what it takes like to kind of crack into head coaching and assistant coaching ranking. So we have people who understand their role and what it's going to be with developing and creating more opportunities for this next generation. And that's why the ecosystem and getting more black coaches plugged into us and in our database is important, because also with MLS, I will say this, we have a conversation with them earlier this week and they're looking at ways to create more resources and access. With U.S. youth soccer, it's been the same thing. So we're going to hold people's feet to the fire and work together with people, because we recognize that we'll get so much done together rather than separately.
Right. And about talking about holding U.S. soccer feet to the fire, I have this question that has always been burning about me, and you're probably the best person to answer this. What is it with U.S. soccer having these astronomical fees for getting a coach's license?
It's a huge problem. Huge. It's a huge, 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 huge problem. But I will say this. I know that the National Women's Soccer League, Kimberly Crabb, who was the first African-American woman to play the game, they now have a scholarship that's in her name where they will, you know, take on some of the costs. Some, I think it's all of the costs for women who, you know, want to get their, you know, their coaching license. So they are looking at ways and ways that they can help. It's been on the table for years. But that, I would say, when it comes to a pro license and the higher licensure, is a problem that comes up. In our database, we ask for different types of feedback to have a good understanding on how we can better serve our population. And a lot of people feel like a barrier is exactly what you said, the cost of getting your professional license, yeah. Your A license, UEFA A, all those things. It's a bit of a barrier.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's probably cheaper to get a license in Europe than it is here.
A lot of people have gone that way, like going the Caribbean rank or overseas. Yeah, that people have done that. Yes.
But it just seems as if like U.S. soccer is asking you to go through like hoops and bounds and all these other things. And then forgetting like, oh, stop, you have to work a 9-to-5 to pay for the license. You have to have a 9-to-5 to pay for the travel. Like, I think when I did it, I got all the way up to maybe D. And then I realized, like, in order for me to go take the seat, I had to go travel 4 hours to go somewhere for the class. And it was just like, I can't do this.
And I was talking to someone the other day, and I didn't even think about it in terms, because I don't have children, but I didn't even think about it in terms of being a parent and having to be away from your kids and how it may potentially need to look differently for women who are the, you know, the caregivers or it can be challenging on so many different levels, depending on, you know, where you're at and your family dynamic and things like that. So there's a lot of different barriers to many different people.
Yeah. Hey, this is Elliot. Sorry to interrupt the pod that you're enjoying right now. Promise we'll get back to it as quick as possible. But I just want to say thank you guys for taking the time for listening to this episode. If you want to support us further, you can do so by following us on Instagram at CanIKickItFC and on Twitter, CIKIFC. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at CanIKickItFC and also on Twitter at CIKIFC. Thanks. I'll see you guys later. I know one thing that we've been talking about is giving access, not giving access, but helping to open the doors for African Americans and people of color to get into the game, to make it feel like a safe space. Can you just talk about like how would the club that is looking to change its way for the positive, how would it go about making it a safe space for coaches and supporters?
So we submitted a report to various organizations about just what you said. There were issues that were getting back to us where coaches would be playing or coaching at a predominantly white team. Some racial situation would happen and they wouldn't feel supported. So part of the conversation had to be, you know, is there going to be some type of a review board for our coaches who we need to protect, who are coaching in these landscapes for their to make a living? But when certain things happen, they're not being supported. And that's when they're kind of othered, like they're that black coach who's going through the situation. But let's sweep this under the rug because we don't want to make anyone uncomfortable when this is really something that needs to get addressed. So part of our conversation for keeping a safe space for our coaches are things like that. How can, you know, an association or organization or a club support their coaches? And the same with players. We had situations where players were going through different situations where maybe they have a racist teammate or things are being said, but they're afraid to report it because, again, it's not someone who looks like them who understands the situation. So sometimes they'll contact us or a coach of color that they knew from back home to help them remedy the situation. So we, with the organizations that we're working with, whether it's U.S. Youth Soccer, whether it's MLS, that we talk to them about some of these issues that we're seeing, it's now their responsibility to come up with ways in which players and coaches can have these conversations, but also be safe, not lose their position, not kind of be blackballed, you know, from these opportunities because they're talking about discrimination, but someone else may not feel, but it is just kind of uniquely to them being black.
Do you think there's still even an occurrence with a lot of people of color within the coaching ranks of being blackballed? Like we've seen in the NFL with Brian Flores about how he kind of been blackballed and it took another black coach to hire him. Do you think even with all that support there, do you still think that is kind of like that fear there of if I speak out, this might be the last job I ever get?
I think we've seen many examples that happens. I mean, and I'm not even just talking about from black issues, but even from like the Me Too movement. I think you've often seen that the person who tends to talk sometimes at times is blackballed. And it's something that needs to be discussed because if there's transparency and we want this sport to be better, then people should be able to talk openly about the things that are happening that we can all work together on to make this game better. But I would be lying if I said that isn't a concern sometimes when I hear different things from some of our coaches who are telling us about some of the hiring practices. It's definitely in the back of my head sometimes.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that about how you best try to navigate those situations without making them
I want to protect, you know, I want to protect our coaches sometimes. So I'll be the one who has those conversations sometimes. I'm like, let me know and let me go in the room because I'm not trying to coach at that level. So I have no problem going and having those conversations. But it's sad that it has to be that way and it shouldn't be that way. But it is often in the back of my head that I don't want some of our coaches to get blackballed. Yeah, it's a concern. Hopefully not a true one.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like you shouldn't be the one trying to have those conversations. First of all, they shouldn't be happening anyway. Mm-hmm. Like if I feel uncomfortable at my job, you know, like I should feel welcoming enough to go talk to you and be like, hey, this is what happened. This is why I feel uncomfortable, and I have evidence to support that. Not having to bring in a third party to mediate.
Can I tell you what's tough about it too? Is I mean, we have, and I'm not going to say any names, but we have a coach who moved mm-hmm. from one area to the next, and he reported a situation that had happened, and they made it seem like they were moving him to another area to help him with the situation, and then he lost his job. But then the next couple of weeks of moving to a different location to kind of remedy the situation. So yeah, we have some, there's also policies and systems in place that support this treatment to continue. So we have some real issues here that need to be discussed and a light needs to be shined on it. So these are things that need to just come out in the open and we need to have real conversations about how we fix it.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And these are serious conversations, like you said, that needs to happen, and not having that feeling as if you know, what we have to say is not important enough, or like, oh, we'll get to it at a later date, which really means we'll probably never get to it. So I want to ask you about the conferences that you guys have, which is annually, correct?
Yep, every year. I believe it's the second week in January. We're in Philly next week, so I hope you guys come through. I'm inviting everybody. We want to really have a good showcase and have a good social with everyone. So we'd love to have you guys out there with us.
I would love to. So I want to ask you this. How does a typical conference look like for the?
Oh my gosh, it is a wonderful experience. First of all, I'm going to tell you, don't get overwhelmed, because when you get there, you're just going to see thousands of coaches. You'll see some celebrities, some players, and things like that that you may have watched, depending on who's on the schedule. There are so many sessions. You're going to probably have, I'm trying to think how many sessions they would do in a day, but from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m, there are sessions. So coaching education, field demonstrations, teaching coaches different, tactics and things like that, technical skills sessions. There's things on how you deal with, you know, the business of soccer. Because a lot of times you have coaches who are former players who just kind of jump into coaching, and then you want to start a business, and it's not that simple. So, you know, there's different things to help prepare you for that. There's everything that you can think of to help you in the soccer landscape. And I think especially just with networking, meeting new people, that iron sharpened iron type mentality, the convention is a phenomenal place. There's socials. My group is a part of an advocacy council. So the advocacy council is a group that speaks to the needs of our community. So we have a women's group. We just started an AAPI group. There's a Native American group, a Latino group. There's a disabilities and allies group, college group, high school group, all different types of things for people to be able to advocate for the different spaces and different issues that happen within those different landscapes. But it's fun. I'll tell you that. We have socials. People get to kind of party and have fun. But on the professional level, to develop your skills and to kind of continue to move you forward in your coaching career, or even if you just want to come in and meet people in the soccer landscape, like-minded people who are all going to be, you know, in one location, one time of the year, there's nothing like it. The energy is amazing. Most people will tell you that they leave so inspired. You leave with making a lot of new friends. So it's a great place to be, and I would highly recommend it for you next year.
Yeah, I would love to go to one. Second week of January.
And there's Podcast Row. Oh my gosh, I forgot about this. So they have Podcast Row now. So there's like literally a row area where it's all of the different podcasts in the soccer landscape, and you guys are all just there. You can, you know, grab people to interview. Maybe you'll see I just did an interview with Ezra Hendricks, and maybe see the Chicago Fire head coach Ezra. You can grab him, see if you can get an interview with him for your show. So it's really cool and really interactive. And they just try to find new ways to serve the coaching community the best way that they can. And I think they do a wonderful job. We have a new CEO who wants to personally work with our group. So I'm always really encouraged with the work that we can do. And I actually wish the Federation would be more like us at United Soccer Coaches, to be honest.
Look, we can talk about days about the Federation. But I want to go talk about a point you just brought up, which is really like podcasting and soccer media and stuff like that. We've really seen an influx and a boom in Black soccer media. You know,
platforms
such as 2 Cents, Us, For the Culture, and others. Can you just speak about what it means for you to see that, knowing that, you know, 20, 25 years ago, we didn't have anyone covering a game like this?
I love it. And I love the solidarity that I'm seeing. It's not a competition. And I love that the most. I love the support that I see. And I think it's something that sets the tone for all of us. So when we talk about building the ecosystem, you guys are included with that too. And it's a way that we show, not show, we know our value. So there's never showing our value. We are valuable. We are the trend. We are the culture. We are everything comes from, everything comes. We know that. I don't have to say that to you. But us coming together in a way is super powerful. Can you imagine all of the fan supporter groups, the coaches, the players, the administrators, everyone who's in different relationships with this game, all supporting, lifting up, and encouraging each other? That's what I'm looking for us to build next. And that's why I want to invite everyone, you know, to the convention, so we can have a year, at one time a year, when we're all getting together and we're inspiring each other. We're firing each other up. We're just saying, hey, you're doing a phenomenal job. Keep it up. And I think that's the future of what this sport can look like for us. I think we'll be able to create opportunities, and we have not be able to, we do. We've been able to create opportunities for each other. And I think we'll continue to do that as we continue to broaden and come together and just really stay airtight, loving and loyal to our community.
Be one big old family reunion. We've never seen each other. Would just be one big family.
And it feels like that. You know, this convention was cool because I think it was one of the first times where I saw a lot of real young coaches. Right. And some of the real, I think, barriers that had been there in the past, a lot of those things have been alleviated. We now have so many opportunities and resources. We almost have more than we can fill. So really cleaning up our database and making sure all the coaches who come up know of the opportunities that are out there. It's going to be huge. So I'm excited for what the future looks like for Black coaches and for Black players and just for soccer itself.
Word. That's dope. One last question before we get up out of here. What is the next step for Black soccer coaches organization? What is the next step for you guys?
For us, we have a lot of different things that we're working on through our, we're actually restructuring a little bit because we have such a talented young group that's coming up and we want to make sure that we're able to access their skills. So we worked two months ago on restructuring our strategic plan so that it includes more people. We want more people in leadership positions so that they can build relationships with folks who make decisions in the soccer landscape. And the more that they're plugged into our strategic tasks, the more they'll be able to meet the people that they need to meet and to continue to be in a position to be around those who make proper decisions in this game. So next month, what you'll see probably by April is you'll see a bunch of the new appointees that we have in different roles. You're going to see a lot more Black faces. We have a lot of different initiatives from within United Soccer Coaches to outside of it with the different partnerships that we have that are to create more opportunities for our coaches, whether it's direct coaching opportunities, whether it's getting Black-owned clubs within the soccer landscape so they don't have to kind of be separate and alone, whether it's dealing with some of the racial problems that are happening and discrimination within the coaching ranks. There's a lot of different initiatives we have aligned with a lot of different partners. So we're looking forward to that. But stay tuned. I can't necessarily pinpoint any of it because we're still working on it. But you'll hear about it.
Well, most definitely. We look forward to seeing what you guys have planned. Nicole, I just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day for coming on our show. Where can everyone reach out to you at and support the organization?
I'm always so bad at this because I'm not good on social media. So you can always follow let me actually look this up. I think it's Black Soccer Coaches on Instagram and Twitter. I think it's Coaches Black on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. We have a young group that's coming in to really revamp our social media. So keep a lookout on that. I'm not that active on social media, but you can follow me, Nicole M. Hercules. You'll find more stuff about our group on the Black Soccer Coaches pages, though. And then, of course, United Soccer Coaches. If you go to the United Soccer Coaches page, you will see our group. You'll see all of our different strategic plans and things like that for folks who want to get involved. And then you can also learn about a lot of the things that United Soccer Coaches does, especially for you guys. Make sure I want to see you guys at Podcast Row next year.
We'll definitely try our hardest to be there. As always, listeners, we just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day for listening to our show, because without you, this wouldn't be possible. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at CanIKickItFC. And as always, be safe, be easy. We'll holler at you.